Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I'm Stephen W. Long, author of the novel There's a Somebody, and I would love to hear from you. If you care to comment on the show or the book, or if you have suggestions, you can reach me through the website, stephenwlong.com, or the Facebook page is There's a Somebody. And today, I really am so happy to have as my guest Barbara Drake. Barbara is a great friend and an author of both nonfiction and poetry. And so good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I've told you some of this already, so this is not in any way to embarrass you, but you're one of my favorite poets. And the book that I particularly like is your book, Driving 100. And I think when I got that, the first five or six poems I read, I felt like I had to write to you about each one because they're so relatable. In every poem, I thought, I felt like that or I had an experience like that. I've told you before that the work is so accessible. But after about the 20th, I thought, well, I can't do this on every one, so I had to stop. But you've been a poet for, I suspect, many, many years.
Yeah. Let's see. I don't know when you start being a poet because I always liked reading poetry. I don't know whether kids do that anymore, but back in the day when we didn't have all the electronic devices, I read books constantly, and I think I started reading Lewis Carroll when I was six, and
really?
I think that's the beginning of poetry, although my mother always read to me, and I think I had a lot of children's verse and things in my head from, you know, from the time I was little. I think she must have read to me from the time I was born. So when do you start being a poet, if you're a poet? I don't know. When I was in seventh grade, somebody gave me a copy of my first collected Shakespeare and poems by Edna St. Vincent Millay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, you know, poetry, this is great. And so I looked for it and wrote things, and I thought, well, you have to have a typewriter to write poems, so I thought. So sometime in there when I was a teenager, one of my parents bought an old typewriter. Whoops, my dog is starting to bark at something, probably nothing. But anyway, bought an old portable typewriter at a rummage sale and brought it there, and I typed what I think of as my first poem. So they were terrible, you know, about being a teenager and no one understanding you and walking by the ocean. I lived in Coos Bay and hearing the seagulls cry and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if you say, when did you start writing poetry? It's just hard to say. It's all there in my life.
Sure.
But I didn't publish poems until I was, a senior in college, I guess. I published my first poems in Western Humanities Review and Prism Magazine, and so I felt like, well, that was another beginning to do that.
Sure.
I think the first two poems I published were accepted right away, and I thought, oh, this is easier than I thought. And then I think there was a big, long gap before the next ones came out, so, you know.
Yeah.
I just keep writing poetry.
Do you have that first poem? Do you still have it?
Oh, yeah, I do. I don't know where it is right now. You mean the first one? Are you talking about the one in high school that I said was pretty bad? Or
Yes.
I don't know if I have that or not. I've got a lot of paper. Sometimes I think, what should I do with all this paper? But
sure.
You know, there are things in boxes. I probably have it somewhere in the funny old type of that antique typewriter. Crooked letters and the keys smacking the page and all that thing.
Sure.
Used to do.
I think we shouldn't be embarrassed by that. I mean, all of us who write have some early writing that you look back and by today's, the talent that you have today, the stuff is probably horrible. But that's okay, because you got started and you did it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it shows your improvement, and it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, I know. I'm never embarrassed by it. It's what you look at it and you think, there's that other person I was back then, you know, who became who I am now, and I think everybody should be happy. You kind of wish, what can I say, that when you were 15, you knew some of the things that you know now that make life easier, but otherwise it's all part of life.
Well, that's for sure. If you knew then what you know now, then you wouldn't really be 15. You'd be something else.
That's for sure.
I think we have to go through that. I'm going to divert and be just slightly personal for a couple of seconds, and then we'll get back. I learned last night that a high school friend passed away.
Oh.
And I have no other information, and it turns out that she was my girlfriend in high school. And I think back and just wish that I'd been a better person. And I think that about a lot of my relationships. I mean, those kind of relationships, but also just with my dad or with whoever. And, you know, I just hope that we grow and learn and that we are better people as we go along.
Oh, well, you probably weren't a very bad person, knowing you now. But anyway,
well,
that is that when you lose old friends and you think back to when
sure.
you're young and your mind can leap there in a second, and yet it has taken years to get here from there.
Sure.
So, you know, after you get be a certain age, it happens too often.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something else. I love your book, Peace at Heart. And I've told you in person that this reminds me of James Herriot. And it does, for the only reason is that it's a view of nature, but it also has such a gentleness. Terrific book. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, that book was written over quite a few years. Well, when we moved from Portland out to the country here, I started teaching at Linfield. I'd been in Michigan at Michigan State, and I wanted to move west. I'd grown up out in Oregon. So I kept looking for a job out here, and in 1983, I got a job at Linfield to develop their new undergraduate creative writing program, and that was just starting then. So I lived in Portland because we had a lot of kids going to school there and so on, and I commuted for 4 years from Portland.
Yeah, that's a long commute.
Yeah, there are still people who were hired when I was still doing it, but I had this feeling like being shot out of a rocket every morning to get onto the freeway and change lanes and whatnot. And so when the kids got out of school and excuse me, were going on to their own apartments and college and whatnot, we decided to move closer. So we came out and looked for this, for a place to live, and ended up buying this farm, a 20-acre farm, not really much of a farm, but a nice country place with a beautiful landscape and a really old kind of amateurishly built house. And, you know, it was a house that was built, 80 years ago. But anyway, so we've been fixing that up ever since. That's since 1987. It seems to be a terminal job, but we still love this place. And over the first 10 years that we lived here, there were so many new things that I was learning about. I started raising sheep, something I'd always wanted to do, had chickens, got border collies, which I loved, and my parents had raised sheep for a while when I was born in Kansas. They were raising sheep, and I heard stories about the border collies, so in some ways I was going back to that, those
mm-hmm.
stories to try it myself, and gardening and all that stuff. And Yamhill County is such a gorgeous place, and there just was a lot to learn about living in the country and doing these things, so I started writing these stories. And at that time, the Oregonian had a really nice, well, for one thing, it published 7 days a week, which it no longer does,
mm-hmm.
at least not on paper, but it had some other features that were great. It had a magazine, a weekly magazine called Northwest Magazine. So I started writing some of these country essays and sent them to Northwest Magazine, and they published some of them, and an editor at OSU Press saw them and asked if I had a book. So that was a happy connection. And
sure.
I started pulling together the essays I'd written and some more, and they ended up publishing it. So it really was a book about all the things you learn and all the things that are amusing and sad and wonderful about living in the country and right here in Yamhill County. So that was what that was about. Now, that was, I'm not sure, 12, 13 years ago that was published. And since then, I've been working on more essays. And last year, I started pulling all those together. And now, I'm happy to say that Oregon State University Press is going to publish a second book of country essays that are on different subjects. And it's a different sort of book. That other one was like, here we are, and there are lots of things to learn, and these are all new experiences. And this new book also has new experiences and everything from dealing with country water issues to coyotes to cats, wild cats. I mean, feral cats, dogs, taking sheep herding classes with my border collies, things like that. But it also is a book that's about how, I guess when we moved out here, we said, well, we'll live out here until I retire, my husband and I, and
right.
then we'll move back to Portland where we lived before, where you can walk everywhere and be in the city and all that stuff. Well, now I've retired, been retired for 6 years, and we're not moving. So, you know, and so the book is sort of about, well, when you get older, should you live in the, keep living in the country? And right now the answer is certainly yes. There's just endless richness of life to explore out here. And much as I love Portland and going into the city and sitting in coffee shops and visiting my grandkids there and all of that, I look around this hill we're on and at all the plum trees coming into blossom right now and all the beautiful spring flowers and the air and the sky and everything. And I think, okay, I'm just fine. I'm just going to stay put.
And Barbara, so, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. I think
no.
It sounds to me like your home, where you're calling from, is such a refuge. But you can venture out. You can go the other way and spend some time. Now, I know your daughter, Monica, I think, am I right that she lives in Portland?
Yeah, she does. And my son, Moss, and his family live in Portland. And I have two stepchildren and their families who live in Portland. So we have a number of grandchildren there, as well as in Seattle and L.A. and Alaska and so on. I know that
sounds
like
gosh.
A lot of grandchildren. But, yeah, but the fact
well,
is,
it does.
There are. But, to go into Portland, like on Wednesdays, I normally go into Portland when my daughter and her husband are working all day and pick up my granddaughter at her school and take her to her ballet class out in Selwood and have a treat or dinner or something like that. So, you know, we have regular connections with the city, too, but it's just great to live out here where it's pretty. And
well, I was going to say... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. Go ahead. I want to hear what you're going
well,
to ask.
Yeah, well, the first book, in some way, and I think maybe thematically, sort of reminded me of the book A Year in Provence. And that is, you know, it's a new environment, and you're sort of learning the ways of that new environment. It sounds like the second book, you're established, and you're already, you know, you've kind of got your feet on the ground, and you know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
What's the name of the second book?
Morning Light, Stories from Yamhill County.
Okay. Gosh, I can't wait for that.
So we'll see if any of that changes. That's what it is. The press has it now. They're editing. And, you know, if somebody thinks they want to change the title, they'll approach me on that. So you never know until it comes out for sure if that's going to be the title. But I think it is. I think they like Morning Light. And when you think about it, I think, well, should I say stories from the country or stories from Yamhill County? But I kind of like the identification with a specific place. So I hope they'll want to continue with that subtitle. You think in some ways it might narrow the audience for the book. They'll think Yamhill County, where's that? On the other hand, it's I think of the book like Sandhill. What is it? You know, although Leopold, he mentions Sand. I can't remember the title right now. But anyway, there, when you write about place, as I often do, you take the place as it comes and you accept it. It's there, whether you're there or not. But on the other hand, for readers, you to some extent, you create the place for them.
Well, and you know,
like
what
anybody
that makes
who writes, if they live in New York and they mention Broadway or some other street or Lower East Side, everybody's supposed to know where that is, and we do know where that is. If you're in a more remote part of Oregon, it's up to you to help create that place in the minds of others so that they won't just take it as a given.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Well, I do, and I was going to say you did such a beautiful job of that in Peace at Heart. I'm trying to visualize get my head around how this new one is going to be presented. And I guess what I mean is there is such a tone to the first book, such a gentle tone, and it you made Yamhill be a place that we wanted to visit.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems so appealing, and I'm sure the second one will as well.
Yeah, I think it will. There's also a theme of trying to figure out how I got here in my life to this place. And as I was finishing the book, I came across my brother had done some family research, and I had gotten a copy of a postcard and two letters that my grandmother wrote in 1939 41 and 44. Anyway, just around the time I was born. I was born in 1939, which sounds like a long time ago when you talk about the 30s. But anyway, end of the Depression, war coming on. And she was a great and optimistic person. I remember her even though she died when I was four. And in her letter, she's writing to her brother, and she tells him that her husband died in 4 days after getting encephalitis, and they were raising sheep.
Oh, gee.
And she mentions the weather and the dryness and all this. And then in the next letter, it's war is coming on, and some of the young men in the family are going to go to war and so on. And yet, these are all kind of, they're kind of side details that she mentions in the letter that gives you that sense of time. And anyway, I'm going at this a long way, but she talks about the sheep and how when they had to move off the farm, she always missed seeing sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentions me being born, and she mentions me a couple years later and so on. And there I am, and I think, well, how did I get where I am? Did I come here because, well, we all get where we are in part because of our predecessors. And what
mm-hmm.
they And so from there, I make a jump forward and think, I just hope for my grandchildren that it's going to be a good world. Because it's so beautiful, even though there are so many troubles in the world, it's a wonderful world, and I don't want people to wreck it for the future kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a big, environmental statement?
Well, it is.
We all owe a lot to the people that came before us, and we owe it to the future to take care.
Sure.
So that's one of the themes of the book. It's not a heavy theme, but it's there, and in all the appreciation and description of things in nature and the country here, I hope that comes through.
Yeah. In other words, it's worth the effort of preserving.
Right. We're caretakers of it, you know. We don't live here permanently, but, or maybe we do in some sense, but there are kids coming down the line, and as I said, I have a lot of grandkids and step-grandkids, and, you know, I want their lives to be good as mine has been.
Sure. Well, amen to that.
Yeah.
Barbara, I wanted to mention something else. You are the founder of the Terroir Creative Writing Festival.
Along with UNM,
Well, yeah. And Emily Chadwick, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the fifth year now, I think, coming up?
Yeah, right. April 19th will be our fifth annual festival, and it's amazing to me that it's hanging in there, and I think it's taken on a reality that people expect it to be there, but I hope they know that we always need volunteers and financial support and all that, because it's really a good thing to have here.
Sure. Yeah, well, I'm trying to remember. I think at the time that you were the president of AAYC, I mm-hmm. was the editor of the newsletter.
That's right. Seems like yesterday.
Yeah, I know. And it reminds me, I had a little editorial about this, that you just can't take things for granted. It's so wonderful to conceive an idea and then see it to fruition. That's certainly one step.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it appears to be established, it still needs to be nurtured. And so
absolutely.
People, as you said, they need to support the program.
Uh-huh.
They need to participate in lots of ways. One could be volunteering. One could be just showing up on the day and
right.
showing us that you're interested. So you're going to be a presenter this year, as am I.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to comment about any of the other folks, or is that too much?
We have a terrific program. I hope I don't leave anybody out, but we're going to, Paul Ann Peterson, who's Oregon's Poet Laureate in her fourth year, is going to give the opening address. And we have Karen Carbo, who has written, I forget how many books, 14 or something like that. She's written novels, nonfiction, and she has a series called Kick-Ass Women, and her latest one is about Julia Child. And she's not only a good researcher and writer, but she's very funny. And she's going to give the afternoon address to the whole group after lunch. We have a lot of different, we have a good variety. We always try to get poetry, fiction, nonfiction,
mm-hmm.
so on. Joe from Linfield, the new creative writing faculty member there, has
Joe
several
Wilkins.
Prize-winning books, and he's going to be on the program. Lisa Olin Harris, who lives in Newburgh, and her second book just came out about taking care of her mother-in-law in her last years, and
right.
we've got other programs. Marilyn Warwick, who has a book arts center where she teaches classes, so and is going to give a two-hour workshop in the handmade book, and all the supplies are included. I can't believe what a good deal that is. Our festival prices are not very high, and people can go online to get a registration form. You just have to look up Terroir Creative Writing Festival, and I should say Terroir is spelled T-E-R-R-O-I-R, and it has to do with the character of place, which is often used as a description in wine making,
mm-hmm.
And French term, and I like the term. It does sometimes present problems when people aren't familiar with it, and they end up spelling it terrier and
Terror
or something else, but it's Terroir.
Yeah.
And I think people are getting used to it. So if you go online looking it up, it's Terroir, Creative
uh-huh.
Writing Festival. Easy to find. We're on Facebook and have a website, and you can connect to the Arts Alliance, the AAYC website also. Let's see, there are a lot more people. Lex Runciman from Linfield is teaching a poetry
yeah.
workshop. We have Jennifer White, who is a letterpress artist from Washington, who is going to actually bring a letterpress down and let people experience what it's like to make a broadside with a hand-operated letterpress.
Mm-hmm.
We have type that's going to actually make an imprint in the paper. It's a very beautiful form of art that she makes broadsides and combining literary works with art and lettering and presentation. I think that.
I hope I get to see that.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm forgetting some people, but anyway.
Maggie Chula.
Oh yeah, Maggie Chula. She's the president of the American Tonka Society, and she is a longtime practitioner of Japanese poetry forms. And she's going to teach a Tonka workshop.
Okay.
Are we running out of time?
No, we're
anyway,
okay.
It's
going
to be a great thing. I apologize to anybody that I forgot to mention. But anyway, I hope people go on. It's the best deal in conferences. The registration is very low. People who really need scholarships can contact us. So
sure.
Hope to see a lot of people there April 19th so we can keep this program going.
Keep it going. Let me just mention Eleni Grossvenor.
Oh, yes. She's going to do a workshop on travel ready, and she is terrific. I just looked at the video on Facebook of her talking about what she would be doing, and it sounds fascinating. I hope I get the schedule so that I can attend her workshop. She publishes in Sunset Magazine and the Automobile Magazine. What's it called? You know, like Automobile Insurance Magazine and things like that.
Yeah, I think is that VIA?
What is it?
I believe, I think it's called VIA.
I don't know. She's got a lot of different outlets, so I may be getting some of that wrong. But anyway, she's wonderfully intelligent and interesting when she was on the public access TV show with Philippi. So,
well, I think we've been just really blessed with the quality of the folks who've attended. And I have to say, I think that we were able to draw these people because of your connections and associations. So I don't think anybody would disagree that you've been the driving force behind this, and we're just so appreciative.
Well, it takes everybody. And Lisa Weidman is terrific with publicity, I should say that. She's been with us every year, and so
yeah.
You know, she ought to be on there as a founder, too. And in the past, there were people that aren't on it now but did a great job, Ellie Gunn, other people that
right.
Have helped get it started. And
sure.
I'm already getting inquiries from writers who have heard about it and say, oh, next year, consider me for a workshop, which I think is great. I'm happy to hear from people because
right.
if we know they're interested, it makes it easier to put together a program.
Right. And actually, I've had a couple of those as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Barbara, I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit, just a little arm twisting. Your daughter, Monica, is an author.
Yeah.
At some point, maybe you would intervene for me and see if we can get her on the show as well.
Oh, I'm sure she would like that. She's got two novels out that are really good, amazing novels. I'm very proud of her.
Oh, they're terrific.
All my kids.
Sure. Oh, great.
So, yeah, she could come on and talk about... She's got two novels, The Clown Girl and The Stud Book, and she's been touring and reading and so on, so I'm sure she would be happy to do that.
Well, good. I'll get hold of you later, and maybe we can arrange that.
Okay.
So, Barbara, I'm going to let you get back to your sheep and your collie and so on, but thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And I really encourage everybody to look for a copy of Morning Light as well as the previously published books.
Morning
again,
Light
if you want.
Will be out in the fall.
Yeah, in the fall. Okay. Well, you know what? I will do my best to remember, but you remind me as well, and I'll put that up on my website, and we can make an announcement on the radio show.
Okay. Well, I think what we're going to do right now, my husband's here with his walking shoes on. Time to go out and take the dog walk out on this good day.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah. And, folks, again, just to let you know, love to hear from you at stephenwlong.com. You can read a little bit about me and the book and so on. Or we can interact through Facebook, and that's There's a Somebody. And just have a blessed and wonderful Monday. Take care. See you next week.
Can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number. sense the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just no good anymore since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number.